sun goes down,
the sports talk heats up. Atlanta is a sports town.
And we're here tonight to talk Atlanta sports. But not just talk at you, but talk with you.
This is our town, and this is your show.
This is Chris Thomas Tonight
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Chris Thomas.
What's up, Atlanta? Didn't realize it was still summer, but here we are, 76 degrees, partly cloudy skies, doing my best weatherman impression here in the great city of Atlanta, in the great state of Georgia. It's Chris Thomas Turtle with you for about the next 3 hours, a little less. Going to be with you till 6:30, taking you up until Hawks pregame. They've hit a little bit of a skid after a really hot West Coast trip. We'll see if they can get back on track playing the very lowly New Orleans Pelicans without Zion. You know what? He did all that work in the offseason, got in tremendous shape. Looks like he's carved out of wood. Hurt again. Hamstring. Dude can't stay out of his own way. Will he be a trade chip? Possibly. Would somebody want to take that on? He's got a fat contract and he can't stay healthy, but New Orleans is certainly going nowhere fast. And oh yeah, the Hawks, they have their pick. How about that? The gift, the trade that keeps on giving. Absolutely love to see it. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. We will get to your calls here in just a second on the Falcons. Been all college football here today on the station on a Saturday, as it usually is. Started your morning with college football game time with Garrett, Nabe, and John, and Chris. And then we had the game in which you just saw. What happened to Louisville, man? They were rolling for the first half of the season. Looked really good, got ranked, had a big win over Miami. And then it's been absolutely nada since then. But this is, I got producer Josh with me today. Josh and producer Dom will be checking in a little bit later. But this week of games is like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, because you know you have such a big day tomorrow. Like, I bet you the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, you have the least amount of calories consumed in America.
Yeah, you're preparing.
On the day, like, as a day.
You're preparing. You're like, all right, tomorrow I need to get ready for the party.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you're limiting what you got.
It's the day that the most salads are eaten, the day that the least amount of beer and soda is drinking, you know, the day that the chips stay in the closet, the day that the frozen Snickers bar stays in the freezer. You know, you're eating light. You're having maybe a couple of eggs for breakfast, maybe a little oatmeal. You know, some
little protein shake, yeah, or something,
some
you
grilled,
know.
Some grilled chicken,
supplement, you know,
with veggies, you know, a little salmon. Because you know the next day is going to be absolute mayhem. You're going to pulverize your gut into oblivion with all of the carbs and all of the sugar and all of the goodness that we can handle. Rightfully so. And, Josh, I say all that to say that's this week's slate in college football. It is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving slate of college football today. Texas A&M, they were playing Samford. Yes, S-A-M, Samford. They beat them 48-0. Bounce back performance for Mr. Reed after the up and down affair last week. He only played a quarter, 48 zip. Georgia, Josh, you know what I did this week? Orn and I are make our picks every Thursday on Chris Thomas Tonight.
Okay.
He right now has built up a 3-game lead on me. So I'm getting a little desperate here, especially with the college slate starting to wind down a little bit. The spread for Georgia was 43.5. And I said, you know what? Georgia doesn't cover these games. They never do.
No.
Kirby Smart teams, for whatever reason, if the spread is like over 35 points, it's almost a lock that they will not cover these big numbers. And they didn't again today. And you know what your boy did? Took Charlotte plus 43.5 to Riverside Orin Romaine.
There you go.
And I have gained a game back on Saturday. I am now.
You got to take that leap of faith sometime.
I am now just 2 games back of Orin Romaine. We both have Georgia Tech tonight, so that's a wash. and then we'll see what happens. So we pick Thursday night, Falcons, Georgia Tech, and Georgia every week. We pick those four games. So I am in the catbird seat now, gaining a much – and I just knew it. I was – and Orrin knew it too. You know what I think he did, Josh? Got a little cocky. Got a little big for his britches there. And those are big britches because Orrin's –
Yeah, he's already big enough. For
the yeah, game. Like you're a large man yourself, but he even makes you look diminutive.
That is true.
And, you know, so for him to do that, tisk, 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 Orrin. I'll be rubbing it in your face next week. So Georgia easily covers. A weird game for Gunnar Stockton, 17-21 for only 196 yards and a pick. Nate Frazier had two rushing scores to carry the day. So an odd one there from Gunnar against a 1-10 Charlotte team who was 0-4 on the road. Miami takes care of business. James Franklin was in the house hyping up new squad, pregame ceremonies, holding babies on the field. Didn't matter. Miami goes in and doubles them up. Carson Beck with a really, really nice game, 27-32 for 320 and four TDs. So that was a nice game there. Tony, 12 catches, 146 yards, and a score. This one was a little disappointing, especially with Bo Prabula coming back. Mizzou just had nothing. Oklahoma's defense smothering at home. They do just enough on offense. Mateer was a one-man gang, 18 carries for 60 yards on the ground. Their leading rusher threw for a couple of scores as well. And Oklahoma takes care of business against Mizzou, 17-6. Ohio State, no issues versus Rutgers. Julian Sain continues to get the Heisman buzz, adds a couple more touchdowns today to his resume as Ohio State cruises at home to 11-0. Rutgers only manages to put up 9 points on the road. A couple of interesting matchups going on, led by USC Oregon right now. That's the big game in the midday window. That one right now, early in the first quarter, USC is driving, looking to go up against Oregon on the road. Oregon's number 7, USC number 15. USC cannot afford another loss. Really, neither can Oregon if they want to contend for a top 4 spot, but one of those things is going to have to give. Notre Dame up huge on Syracuse right now. 21-0 in the first quarter, so that one should be no issues there. Diego Pavia looking to keep Vandy's season rolling. They're at 8-2. Kentucky's in their building. He started off hot, 6-for-6 for 50 yards. Texas is taking on a bad Arkansas squad. They should roll at home to go to 8-3. Ranked Tulane, number 24, is at Temple. We'll see if that's a trip-up game there. I don't think so. And then the big ones tonight. It's right here. It's in our backyard, literally in the backyard of Colony Square here in Midtown. Pittsburgh at 7-3, 5-1 in the ACC, goes to the flats to take on number 16, Georgia Tech, who is sitting at 9-1 right now, 6-1 in the ACC. Haynes King having an insane season, 2,300 yards through the air, 10 touchdowns, just 2 picks, and then 150 carries for 800 yards and 14 touchdowns on the ground. So just having a legendary season there for Georgia Tech, and that's the biggest game of the night. 7 o'clock under the lights on the flats, ESPN game. We shall see what the Ramblin' Wreck can do if they can go into that game versus Georgia in a week with all the marbles on the line. I think they'll do it. I think Pittsburgh, people are giving a little bit too much credit, although Georgia Tech just a 2.5-point favorite at home. So not exactly a lock, but I think they will handle their business nonetheless. All right, 404-726-0929. That catches you up on everything going on the day in college football. Keep you posted on the big games of the day, USC, Oregon, and we'll see how Texas does and everything like that. But Falcons fans, I want to talk to you. 404-726-0929. We'll get into it fully when we get back, but line up the calls. Is there anything this coaching staff can do over the last 7 games, and the GM as well, to save their jobs? Let's discuss, because I do think there's a path, however unlikely it would be. Whether we want that or not is a different story. But Falcons fans, can Raheem Morris and his staff and Terry Fontenot return next year to the Falcons, depending on what happens over these next seven games? We'll talk about it next. 404-726-0929.
Listen to the sports announcers.
Oh, right.
Back to Chris Thomas.
On Chris Thomas Tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Going to get to your calls here in just a second. Grab a line if you haven't already. 404-726-0929. Is there anything this Falcons coaching staff, in your opinion, can do over these last seven games, as well as the GM, to save their jobs? Or do you think this thing is already wrapped up at 3-7? There's definitely an argument to be made for both sides, so let's make them real quick, and then we'll get to your calls. 404-726-0929. If you think there's a path, here's what needs to happen. Kirk Cousins needs to look like the guy that was 6-3 and 4-0 in the division to prove that Zach Robinson can call plays with that quarterback and to prove that this offense is not broken. Bijan Robinson needs to get 20 to 25 touches a game. And I know what you're thinking. Turtle, why would you do that strategy when you're essentially out of the playoffs? Continuity. Continuity's sake. We need to show that this offense can be the offense that we all dreamed it would be at the start of the season or close to it. I know there's no Drake London this week. So again, even more reason, feed Bijan, feed Tyler, and let's get this thing rolling. Defense, got to be more than just sacks, right? The sacks are nice, second in the league in sacks, but you just gave up 450 yards to Bryce Young after giving up 300-plus yards to Jonathan Taylor, after giving up four touchdowns to Tua, after giving up 185 yards to Christian McCaffrey. Jeff Ulbrich, the trimmings are nice, but the nuts and bolts need to come together. If we hold our opponents like we did in the first couple of games of the season, get back to it, I think there's a case to be made. If those things do not happen and we lose the majority of the games, even if they're close, and we don't see continuity from the offense and we don't see that old Kirk Cousins, I think it's going to be near impossible for this coaching staff to make their case to come back next season. What do y'all think? 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Again, is there anything in your opinion? Do you agree with me that there is a path, however slim it may be? Or are you of the mindset, nope, 3-7, disaster, quarterback's out, everybody's hurt, this thing has not gone the way that it needs to, and even when everybody was healthy, still did not get the type of buy-in and the type of results that this team needed. So we're talking about the future of the coaching staff here. What do you think? 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Pete's in Alpharetta. He leads us off. Pete.
Hey, what's up, Turtle?
Yep.
You know, I really don't think the coaching staff can do anything to deserve to keep their job, but I will think that Arthur gives them another year just because we've all seen he loves to give people the three-year windows. But I don't know, just wondering what I've seen this year and the year before. He doesn't blow anybody out. He's never wowing us with the competition that what Raheem Morris should be doing with this roster. We either squeak out a W or we're getting blasted. We have the talent to be easily a 8-win team right now. I truly believe that. The fact that we're 3-7, I think, is just coaching malpractice. And I personally think it's just what the Falcons do, and it's already December, not even December yet, and our season's over.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, Pete, unfortunately, I tend to agree with you. I don't think this coaching staff has stepped up in a way that warrants another kick at the can, another crack at it, whatever cliche you want to use. Because, again, I think the differentiation that Pete made very smartly was that this team was bad before all the injuries. This team was bad before that all kicked in. So it's not like you get the excuse card of, oh, hey, you know, our season's down the toilet because our starting quarterback, wide receiver one, are down right now. No, you don't get to use that as an excuse. I'm sorry. Because this team was bad way before that. Penix was struggling. We were talking about it on this radio station almost every day for the last couple of weeks. What's wrong with Penix? Why is his footwork all messed up? Why is his arm mechanics all messed up? Why is he dropping down and throwing sidearm all the time? Why isn't he using his rhythm and his feet and getting into, you know, a game flow? It looks like everything's just static. Coaching, 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 coaching. That's what it all comes back to. Again, as I said a couple of weeks ago, when times get tough for Michael Penix Jr., he doesn't have the Pat Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson memory bank of what to do in tight situations. He's new to all this. He's played 12 games in his NFL career. His mind has nowhere to go. So how do you make up for that? Coaching. 404-726-0929. Richie's in the A. Richie.
Yes, sir, Turtle. You hit it right on the money. Coaching, coaching, coaching. It's like my mom always tell me, you can have the right ingredients, but if you don't know how to put it together, it's worthless. So my thing is, I don't think that we're going to go and win seven straight. I would love that to happen. I've been a Falcon fan since I came out of the womb, but it's not looking right. We have the pieces. It's just the mentality and the coaching. It's not leading us in the right direction. I want them to go out and destroy the Saints tomorrow, but I honestly don't know how we're going to get past the 50. No Drake running. Mooney is up and down. Pitts is somewhere in the hills, and everybody else are question marks. So I don't even know how we're even going to get in the red zone tomorrow besides running. And I'm just hoping and praying for a miracle. And the only way I see this coaching staff coming back is if Raheem Morris may come back, but Arthur Blank gives them an ultimatum where if you come back, Zach can't come back because we're not getting no points. So it's either going to be this or that. But thanks for taking my call, though.
Yeah, appreciate it. I don't think, again, unless Kirk Cousins turns into the Kirk Cousins that was 6-3, 4-0 in the division, twice NFC Player of the Week, threw four touchdowns in a game twice and broke the single game passing record at 500 plus yards. Unless we get that Kirk Cousins, I don't see any way Zach Robinson comes back, to Richie's point. 404-726-0929. Ian is in Jonesboro. Ian.
Hey, what's up, man? Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm all about second chances and redemption. This is America, and this is what America is about. However, you got to play disciplined football in the trenches. Everything that you said earlier and then coupled with disciplined football, and I just don't see Raheem being able to do that. For that matter, Zach Morris, I just don't see them being able to do that. And that's what you got to add to everything that you said on top of that.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thanks for checking in. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. Yeah, I mean, history tells us that they can't, right? I mean, unfortunately, when you look at Raheem Morris's coaching record, he's over 20 games under 500. That's not a good look, you know, for a resume. And that includes now 1.5 seasons plus here in Atlanta. So, unfortunately, to the caller's point, track record's not on your side. 404-726-0929. John is in Union City. John.
Boy, you can't have Zach Robinson back here under any circumstances. There is no scenario, no way, no type of stratagem or plan where you can have a person back here that has messed this team up the way that he has on offense. Now, Raheem Morris can come back only because he is a manager type of coach and lets his assistants run offense and defense. But besides that's it. And for those of you who are thinking, even supposing, that we can go seven straight, look back at the last eight. Does that tell you we can go seven straight? I have absolutely no faith, no kind of tether to tie my rope to say that we are going to be able to do seven straight. Can't do it. Can't do it. We are doomed. We in the top of the ugly tree, and we're going to hit every ugly branch all the way down to the ugly ground. That's where we are right now.
No.
Sorry about that, people.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for checking in. at 404-726-0929. An exasperated caller right there. And I can you blame him? I bet you a lot of y'all feel that way. Because when you get to the point now where you're 3-7, losing five in a row, quarterback out for the year, it's hard to see the bright side. But the bright side could be all the young talent that's left on this team. But the problem is, on offense, how are you going to see any of it grow with the backup quarterback in? It's tough. It's a really, really tough position to be in. No wide receiver one. That means Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson are essentially your main weapons on offense now. And Kirk Cousins needs to show us and the rest of the league, if he wants to play again somewhere else, that he still has it. And that's what we're dealing with right now. 404-726-0929, Roberts and McDonough. Robert.
Hey, how's it going, boss? Let me run something by you really quick. You're the expert. I'm not. Give Nick Saban $100 million, bring him in, make him your team president and your GM, and you let him wreak havoc. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, appreciate it. I don't think he wants to. I think you know, money talks, of course, but we got to remember, guys, Nick Saban has made more money than God, honestly. Like, he could set his family up for the next 20 lifetimes, and he's also getting paid now by ESPN. Why would he want the headache of coming here in his mid-70s to come here and try to fix this program? And, you know, unfortunately, to the caller's point, Nick Saban hasn't exactly shown that in the NFL he could really do much of anything. His one stint with the Dolphins didn't exactly go great. Had a chance to get Drew Brees and took, who'd he take instead, Josh, in Miami? He took, it wasn't Steve McNair, was it?
Miami?
No, it was Dante Culpepper.
No, it was Culpepper.
It was Dante Culpepper. Yeah, that he took instead of Drew Brees in Miami. So that goes to show you what his time was there. But listen, no bad ideas. No bad ideas. Sam is up next. Sam.
Turtle.
Yo.
Hey, I love the conversation. I feel like, yeah, coaching is an issue, but I feel like everybody's kind of overlooking the front office. I think at the end of the day, somebody has to be held accountable for the decisions being made, getting two quarterbacks in here and allowing the coaching staff to be assembled this way. I mean, I feel like, yeah, you give them the resources, writing the checks, that's one thing. And I feel like Arthur Blank is a phenomenal business owner. But I think at some point, you got to make the tough decisions. And if you see something's not working, you can't be afraid to say, let's go in a different direction.
No, and listen, it's a completely valid point, and I thank you for checking in. I just think when it comes to the ownership, you know, Arthur Blank has his guys, and he has the guys that he trusts implicitly, and he has the guys that he helps make football decisions. And those are the guys, unfortunately, that have not gotten the job done in the previous years. But the downside is Arthur Blank is loyal to a fault. And that's what I said this week. I said, you know, Arthur Blank is not the problem. But if I was Arthur Blank this offseason, I would take a long, hard look at the people in my inner circle and evaluate each one of them and see which one of these guys and gals are contributing to a winning culture and a winning cause. And which ones are not? Because I think some changes need to be made in that department. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. 404-726-0929. More of your calls. Also, Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com, is going to hop on. But if you're on hold, stay there. You'll be first up when we continue taking calls on a Saturday with you till 6:30. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Chris Thomas tonight.
What do you say we get this party started?
Let's get it started.
Sports doesn't stop at night. Neither do we.
This is Chris Thomas tonight
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We'll get back to your calls in just a second here. So if you're on hold, stay there. 404-726-0929. Talking about the state of the coaching staff and the GM and what this team would need to do in order to have the majority of those guys come back next year. Or do you even think that that's possible? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more on the WadeFord.com hotline with our next guest, Will McFadden, senior writer and editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, let's just start here, sort of big picture. What was the vibe and the mood like at Flowery Branch this week as everyone dealt with all the news about the quarterback situation and all the injuries and where this team sort of goes from here?
Yeah, it's a great place to start, Chris, because obviously when you not only get swept by the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, and that is kind of your entry into the week, but you also have to put Michael Penix Jr. on injured reserve with what we now know is a partially torn ACL in his left knee. You know, important to distinguish between the right and the left here, but still partially torn ACL nonetheless. Yeah, it's going to kind of dampen the mood a little bit. I will say, though, that as far as I've seen in the locker room, the players, the coaching staff, like, their mood does not seem very different. And you can understand, right, like, internally versus externally, for each person, how they feel inside may not always be the way they're showing it outside. But I do believe that they're going about the practice week, their business, in as best they can the same exact way, which, you know, is why they are professionals in the NFL. But for sure, you know, on top of the falling to 3-7, having Michael Penix go on IR, Drake London with a PCL, it is not the best week that you could have hoped for going into Thanksgiving week and this weekend's matchup against the Saints in Atlanta.
Zach Robinson this week talked, as well as Kirk Cousins did, about the state of the offense and what they plan to do. How different do you expect things to be with Kirk under center now that we know it's not just for a game or two, but for the rest of the year?
Yeah, you know, I that is really kind of one of the central questions for me. And it was posed to Zach, right? Like, do you throw out the offense? Is it entirely new? That's not really the way all of this works, right? It's kind of like everybody in the NFL, and this is something Dirk Cutter has told me going back to when he was here in 2019, 2020, that everybody's kind of operating with the same deck of cards. It's really just which ones you choose to make a focal point in your offense. For Atlanta with Michael Penix, that was operating out of the pistol formation. But I expect, you know, that part will probably change. The wide zone run schemes, you'll probably see remain the same. Some of the pre-snap motion, that's all probably going to remain the same, because that is integral to what Atlanta wants to do in terms of when you're presenting to a defense and making their life hard throughout the week. All of that kind of falls into it. You've got to prepare for a lot of the set dressing, which helps the quarterback. You've got to prepare for the different formation packages, the different looks that they can give you. So all of that I kind of expect to stay the same. Now, what I do think you will see different is probably more under center, because that is what Kirk Cousins, I think, is more comfortable with. And that makes a lot of sense dating back to his time in college when he came up through the high school ranks. You know, Michael Penix is this new era with shotgun, with 7-on-7 passing camps. Kirk Cousins, probably a little bit more pro style if you look at historically what he's gone through. So you're going to see more of that. I expect that to, you know, pay dividends for an offense, as we have seen across the league. Play action can do. But realistically, I think the passing scheme, you'll see some tweaks there with what Kirk is comfortable with, where he likes to go with the football. But it's going to be hard to differentiate whether or not that has to do with the quarterback or whether or not that has to do with the absence of Drake London, and then where they're moving different guys around and what they're asking them to do. So it's a great question. I don't expect to have a full answer after just this Sunday, but I do expect there to be some probably noticeable differences, but I don't think they're throwing out the whole offense by any means.
I know you don't want to run Bijan Robinson into the ground, but especially this week with no Drake London, I mean, heck, between he and Algier, 40 carries. I mean, that's got to be maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much.
You know, Chris, I am never opposed to giving Bijan Robinson the ball as often as possible. And I think Tyler Algier deserves as many carries as you're willing to give him as well. I do think that the Falcons have said that is their lifeline on offense. I would like for them to stick with that lifeline personally, just a little bit more, especially kind of in the second half of some of these games. And when you look at it on paper, New Orleans has the 21st ranked run defense in the league. And so you say, okay, cool. That's awesome. You should be able to run the ball against them. But here's where there's a little bit of conflict with that one stat, right? They're eighth in rushing yards per play. So when you look at kind of the games that the Saints have been playing, they've been in these games, but they have also been trailing in these games late. So you're going to naturally see a lot more run plays from the opposing offense. So over time, that kind of rushing yards per game metric is going to tick up just because of the sheer volume you're facing. So really, it's the rushing yards per play, and they're eighth best there in that. That is what I am looking at and why I do think, even as it's easy for us to say, give the ball to Bijan, give it to Tyler Allgeier, that might be easier said than done, even if on paper this Saints defense doesn't look like it is as formidable maybe as it once was.
I think this stretch is actually the most important, let's see if you agree, for Kyle Pitts. This is his last chance here in these stretch of games to prove that he still has what we all saw in flashes of greatness throughout his time here in Atlanta. And with the wide receiving core down as many bodies and underperforming the way that it has, he's going to get his chances. And so far it's been a mixed bag at best, to say. He's dropped a lot of wide open passes. He's also made some big plays. But, Will, I really think if Kyle Pitts wants to show, whether it's here in Atlanta or elsewise, that he deserves a nice payday, now is your chance to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, it is in front of him, and it is, we've seen the last 2 weeks, right? There have been opportunities for him to make a big play. Ball has hit him in the hands and not, you know, been reeled in. And it just is a kind of a stark departure from, if you think back to trying to remember if this was the Buffalo game or the Washington game, where that big third down catch that he had in man coverage, I think it was Buffalo, and Mike just kind of hit him right in stride, right as he turned his head around. And it seemed like that was a little bit of a turning of the corner for Kyle Pitts. But I pose a question to you, like, what are you looking for out of Kyle Pitts in these final seven games? What would constitute to you, all right, this guy is it? Is it more stat-based, or is it just a sense of, okay, he has stepped up to become the alpha and kind of the number one receiving option in this offense? What are you looking for?
Well, I think the main thing is consistency, because it clearly has been an issue throughout his career, and it's been speculated as much that giving 110%, as the cliche goes, might not always be on the table, especially if he's not involved in the offense early. So give me consistency, and then this is going to sound like a really simplified answer, Will, but get in the end zone. I mean, he's gotten in the end zone, I think, yeah, 10 or 11 times total in his, you know, almost 5 years in the NFL. So give me four or five touchdowns over these last seven games, and I'd be more than pleased.
I'd be pleased, too. Yeah, if he's able to do that, I think a lot of people would be.
So I think that's what it comes down to. I need him to be consistent, and then I need him to get the ball in the end zone, especially when he has the opportunities that he's had this year and hasn't been able to make the most of it. All right, so that's the state of the offense as we're talking with Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Make sure you check out all his good work there. The defense. This one's tough, Will, because there's been so many bright spots, you know, second in the NFL in sacks. They were leading the NFL in passing yards allowed per game for a while there. So there's been a lot of highs, but there's also been a lot of lows. You give up 450 yards to Bryce Young. You give up 34 points to a bad Dolphins team. You know, Jonathan Taylor goes for 300 yards, McCaffrey for 185. How do we balance the evaluation of Jeff Ulbrich?
Yeah, it is one of those where, as the sample size gets bigger, right, more information kind of comes in. And really, one of the more interesting, I think, stats to me over the course of this season is the Falcons, when you look at time of possession, right, they are, I believe it's 3-1 when they're over 30 minutes, and they are 0-6, right, when they are under 30 minutes. And that Colts game, the Colts had the ball for 40 minutes. Over 40 minutes in that game. So when I'm looking at kind of like some of these performances, especially recently, that is where I'm starting, where you have flipped this time of possession, where early in the season, the Falcons were one of the best teams at possessing the ball, keeping drives alive. The issue was you're not scoring when you get into the red zone. Now they have kind of flipped that around, and you are able to score when you get these opportunities, but you're not able to sustain drives all that often. So the opportunities are a little bit fewer and further between than maybe they were early on. And so that's on the offensive side, but it ripples out to the defensive side, because when you are kind of playing, and they have played some really good offenses recently, right? I know that the Bryce Young stat is very eye-catching because we don't look at the Panthers in that way. But if we take them off the table for a little bit, the Colts, the Patriots, those are both you know, two of the best offenses in the league this year. And then the Dolphins just are dynamic in that sense, but they also figured out really what I'm getting at, which is time of possession, controlling the clock, and putting a defense for Atlanta that is not really down in and down out imposing. They're more, we're going to kind of get you into, we're going to trap you in a corner with our style of play and hopefully get a lead. And then we are built with a pass rush, with a ball hawking mentality, with some smart players and some interesting designs. We're going to kind of make you make mistakes as you get more aggressive. Well, as teams have not needed to be aggressive, and if they have been able to just kind of run the ball and keep their drives alive, and then you have Atlanta's offense unable to do the same on its side, it kind of flips on you. And so basically, I just really think offenses have been able to dictate terms to Atlanta's defense a little more frequently than Atlanta would like. And this is a defense built to play on its front foot and attack. And you're just not seeing offenses feel like they need to be in a mode where they have to take chances, be aggressive, and kind of allow this opportunity for an Atlanta defensive counterpunch, which we saw earlier on in the season. If you think back to the Vikings game, right, like there were a lot of flustering moments, and you can say J.J. McCarthy is a rookie quarterback. Sure, that definitely played into it, but it's because the offense in general, I think, was thrown off and not able to do what they wanted to do. And recently, it just feels like too many times the offense has a good possession, put some points on the board, and then they're able to get the ball right back, which puts Atlanta's defense back out on the field. And over the course of the game, it's going to wear them down. So that is a big part of it. I think Divine Diablo also, like, his absence really does impact the passing game, or has impacted the passing game. We will see if it looks night and day with him back in the lineup on Sunday. So injuries are part of it, but ultimately I really think it is the three-phase aspect of all of this, and we shouldn't discount special teams. There have been too many big returns allowed by Atlanta special teams units, which obviously sets the opposing offense up in a great spot.
Yeah, I mean, my words, not yours here, Will. I was surprised that they didn't make a move at special teams coordinator after the Berlin game. Three separate times you start on the opposition starts on your side of the 50 because of a return. I mean, that just can't happen. And as you mentioned, gaffes throughout the season as well. All right, a couple more before I let you go. So here's the thing. This Billy Bowman injury to me is a huge deal. If he's out for an extended period of time, and if he needs a procedure on that ACL, which it just we don't know yet, it's still being determined. But if he does, not only will, in my opinion, does that hurt you for the rest of this year, obviously, as he was a starter, but it makes you reconsider your defensive backfield alignment depending on how long he would miss. If he does need a procedure, that might change, you know, how soon you would draft another cornerback or maybe make a trade or pick up a free agent. So it not only affects you for this season, but potentially for your offseason plans as well, depending on the severity of the injury.
Absolutely. I mean, that is really an underlying part of kind of the attitude of the around the team this week, it feels like, is these aren't just injuries to Michael Penix and now to Billy Bowman, but if it is kind of the worst version of it, these are injuries that linger on into next year. And when you felt like, okay, we've got some maybe building blocks in place, now all of a sudden two very key building blocks on either side of the ball, there are question marks about the off-season program, about training camp, about kind of investing in and around them for the future. So 100%, I think obviously it is all kind of wait to see. It happened Friday in practice, so we really don't know much more about it at this point. I would expect, you know, after the game tomorrow, maybe Raheem gets asked about it, but that's also a weird environment to ask about kind of that kind of injury. So we'll see. I would expect Monday afternoon for him at the latest to get asked about an update there. But yeah, it's hard to even say a benefit, but the nickel cornerback spot, you're probably not paying top dollar free agent wise as a number one outside corner. And in the draft, you can probably find somebody, you know, Billy Bowman, fourth round pick, right? So you could potentially find a replacement without shelling out everything or investing huge capital in it. And I think they still have high hopes for Billy moving forward. But it was really just kind of the cherry on a crappy week.
Yeah. All right. Before I let you go, save this one for last on purpose because it might require some sort of explanation that I don't know if there's an answer. So let's see if you've been able to dig one up. I have not. Where did the 9-month recovery timeline for Michael Penix Jr. come from?
Yeah, so the first place that I saw this was on Twitter, right? Now, there and specifically, I saw it from Ian Rappaport on Twitter, kind of right as all of the reporting was going down. And to be clear, we really have not gotten the clearest kind of, I think, answers from Raheem Morris at the podium, which complicate, like, it ultimately, I think, comes down to your comfort level as a reporter, which at the end of the day, like that is a big part of this job of what do you believe, what can you confirm, and then what do you share out with those who trust you. So because of the murkiness of all of this going on, I really have not tried to say very much at all. Like, I am of the opinion what is going to happen is going to happen. We will figure it out as it is going on, but I'm not going to rush to try to, like, be the first to put a number or a timeline on any of this, because at the end of the day, like, Michael Penix is not going to be out there on Sunday. That is kind of all that matters. But to answer your question, I saw it on Twitter. That is kind of the first place I saw the 9-month timeline, which would put you mid-August of kind of training camp. So it coming from a national reporter like Ian Rappaport, you give that some credibility and credence, but that has not been a number thrown out by the organization. We really haven't even gotten an answer on what the surgery itself will entail, which to me, that seems like the first step before you put then a timeline on everything. So that's kind of where we stand as far as I'm concerned. Is all I know is that Michael Penix Jr. is going to head to IR with a partially torn ACL on his left knee. After that, I think it is a very murky gray area. And unfortunately, yeah, I don't have much more to help clear out that murkiness.
Yeah, that's the same way I felt about it. I thought it was a very quick and very specific timeline diagnosis. And I was just like, that's interesting. I mean, there's, again, citing the source that it came from, it's as trustworthy as any out there, but still, just very, very worth monitoring, as we shall do. Will, appreciate it. As always, we'll check you out on AtlantaFalcons.com. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
Yeah, of course, Chris. Anytime. Thank you very much.
All right. That is our good buddy there, Will McFadden. All right. If you're on hold, stay there. Back to your calls, as well as some true and false questions from producer Josh before he gets out of Dodge. 404-726-0929. You just heard from Will McFadden. How does what he said make you feel like about this coaching staff? You think it sounds like they have a game plan ready to go for these last seven? Can they save their jobs? That's what we're talking about with you at 404-726-0929. Or is this thing cooked, in your opinion? Your calls are next, as well as some NFL true and false.